on to What's Left, the weekly political discussion challenge in the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with teacher and socialist Andy Lipson and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. We will be discussing today the event that happened, or other events as well that are related to the event that happened on the 25th of May. A series of events have transpired since. We are basically talking about George Floyd, and in the greater context of so many of these events that are tragic, that are happening in especially Black communities where people are being murdered by state-sponsored police. And I'm hoping that we have a discussion where we can please take it from there, Andy. I mean, it's really tragic. I don't know what else to say. It's just, you know, maybe that's also boggling me down, but it's just personally, besides these other conference calls that I've been on, it's been very, as I was discussing with friends and family, it's just, it's a huge load to carry when you are not only confined and people are also economically stressed because of capitalism. There's also this other pandemia that exists, which is discrimination in our society. And I think that that's also the other thing that's really just all of these layers together are just breaking points. And I can see why there's looting, Gauss, riots, and people want to talk about just Target being looted. And it's a distraction. So if you can both just take it from there, I don't know how else to discuss this tragic event. And I don't want to make it about George Floyd, by the way. Myself, I'm not sure if you two, I'd like to ask you both, how would you both bring up this topic?
Yeah, I think that we've all had a bunch of conversations about what's, you know, happened. And obviously there are a lot of opinions. You know, for example, one that happened at work, you know, people were talking about just reducing the explosion of energy on the streets of the U.S., reducing it to stress, you know, brought upon us because of COVID, you know, because people have energy to spend, you know. And I was like, no, it's about the last fucking 400 years, you know, like 500 years. It's about capitalism. It's about, yes, people are stressed, but it's not just COVID. You know, people are tired of shit, you know, and not seeing change. You know, people know something is wrong. And obviously, I don't think that the dominant current of conversations is going to lead to, you know, anything significant happening. But it is encouraging that, you know, people are willing to go out and risk getting sick in order to say, no, we're not going to take this. You know, we're not going to take your curfew, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Floyd's murder definitely ignited a lot of people on the left, you know. And so then it becomes, what then? What needs to happen? And I think that was my intention of today, to figure out, you know, what should be happening, what should we expect, what is preventing from things to actually, that would get us results, you know, what would prevent us to get, you know, from getting there. So I don't know if you have any thoughts, Lipson.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's worth talking about why is this happening, and why has this event of, you know, of a man who was accused of, like, basically over $20 counterfeit bill. He's now dead at the hands of a police officer, one who put his knee on him and the three who just watched. And the fact that it was like an 8 or 9 minute on video thing just shows the complete it shows on the parts of these emissaries of the state. All right. And I think people are just putting on the police, but I'm going to call them the emissaries of our state, of the U.S. state. It shows almost a kind of indiscriminate lack of concern, not a lack of concern, just disregard. Like, they could care less. Like, this person's life means nothing. And I think, you know, this notion of, like, I can't breathe, and the 8 minutes that's one of the things people were saying at the demonstration, and I do actually agree with. I don't know exactly what your friends are saying, but I do agree that there's something about this moment, these last 2 months, 3 months, that have been related to people being strangled, the businesses being strangled, jobs being strangled, people being confined and being told by the state where you can go, what you can do, what you have to wear, 6 feet of separation. At the same time, there's been a massive looting of the treasury by the richest in this country. That puts to shame, I was talking to my brother, that puts to shame what is being called looting here. I mean, this what the ruling class did in terms of getting away with robbery in the context of a crisis puts to pale, cause whatever's happening right now, the looting that's taking place at a Gucci or a Target or wherever, it's minuscule compared to the looting our ruling class just did recently, and to the everyday looting they get away with. And let's not even talk about the U.S. looting every country around it, looting South America, looting Middle East, looting Africa. I mean, there is the level of hypocrisy of people saying, oh my God, property destruction. When what do you think our government has been doing under Obama when instead of bombing two countries, you're bombing seven, and that the U.S. actually ran out of bombs for a while? What do you think's going on there? Do you think there's property being destroyed on a mass level when you run out of bombs? The U.S. ruling, when the U.S. military runs out of bombs? Like, so, first off, there is absolutely no credibility to any mainstream media or any ruling class critic of these demonstrations as violent or as somehow off the chain, you know, in regards to the looting, because the biggest looters and the biggest property destroyers and the biggest destroyers of lives is in the U.S. ruling class. They're doing it internally, and this is what's led to this uprising that's taking place and the fact that it's spreading. And obviously they do it externally. But I do believe there's, like, people are sick of it. And there is a spark that has been lit, because these murders happen all the time. And it is interesting to me that it set off something that's very similar to what happened in the 60s with the Detroit riots and how those spread. But they seemingly kind of came out of nowhere. But they didn't come out of nowhere. Yes, of course, we have 400 years of racism, of class inequality. But I do believe this is about the despair, that the hope that people had around Obama, that he completely threw into the garbage, and then the anger that's come as a result of Trump that came after Obama, and now people getting shit on by both political parties, even though I think the primary beneficiary of this movement will be Biden and the Democratic Party, I think is what has sparked the anger and the outrage. And so I do think there's something significant in what has taken place, not because, obviously, I can't even name all the different Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner. There's so many names that we have heard. Yeah. Who is the one that George Zimmerman murdered? But that wasn't a police.
Trayvon Martin.
But then, of course, the guy in Fruitvale, Oscar Grant. But there's so many more names. But this has entered into a particular time where I do think people are kind of looking at the system, even as the system is re-engineering itself to further clamp down on people. And it has produced a response. It's very promising. Well, I am very heartened by elements. Both me, Kenny, and I were at the demonstration, and I think we'll talk a little bit about that. But yeah, there were things to be heartened for me about these demonstrations and about the riots and about the looting. Like, to me, I'm with those people. Would I get beaten up on those same streets? Maybe. But I'm with that anger. I understand why people are doing that. And if that anger could be harnessed, then we could have a revolution. And I personally believe that the reason our demonstrations will be effective, to the extent that they are effective in getting any sort of change, and right now what has happened is Derek Chauvin went from basically being almost innocent of anything, because they said the guy that George Floyd was killed by, like, a heart attack, Then they suddenly found out, oh, no, he was asphyxiated. Then they charged him. Now they're charging all four police officers. So to the extent that that's happening, I believe is primarily about the spread of the riots and the looting. That's what I'm going to say. That is what it is. It is ruling class anxiety about that that is animating that. It is not our protests. Our peaceful protests said. It is their concern. And the peaceful protests are an aspect of it, but I think the primary wedge that's moving our ruling class right now to make any steps is their concern at primarily Black Latino workers, but they're white workers too, but that a working class is just basically destroying their crap. Because one of the interesting stories about this is in Rodney King, people talked about destroying their own neighborhoods. That's not as much as what's happening right now. I think there's more about, no, I'm burning down your Target. You know, I'm burning down your Walmart. I understand there's local business in that, and I'm not going to act like, and all of us, also there's provocateurs and also there's police, but there's a sentiment behind there, which is I've fed up, I've had it, I'm done with not being seen and heard, and you're not going to see me and hear me in your election, so I'm going to be seen and heard by these actions that I'm taking right now. And I do believe that is what's animating what are called the most violent aspects of this movement in response to the George Floyd murders.
I guess what I mean is that, you know, again, this reductive analysis of what's happening, you know, it's just this single thing, just people are just like bored and stressed, you know, and the people that are looting, you know, they're just people that, you know, they just want to have fun, you know, and it's like this casual thing, you know, without understanding all these connections that you just mentioned, you know, all the pressures that have been building up, that is, you know, obviously, you know, like you said, capitalism is restructuring itself. You know, I don't think necessarily it's dying, but, you know, there is a lot of, you know, things that, you know, that are in connection with other processes, you know, that, or the plan, the master plan, right, you know, of having to go to war abroad, you know, soon enough. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, and like, some of the things that I saw in the protests that I found encouraging, like you, Lipson, because I, you know, I've been around other, you know, sort of gatherings for some sort of political action, or, and generally it always comes back to the Democratic Party, you know, and yes, they were still talking shit about Trump, you know, but it wasn't, you know, let's go vote. It wasn't, let's go vote Biden, which, you know, might end up, you know, very likely because the Democrats are going to do everything they can to, you know, grab this current and ride it, and, you know, into winning. But it's not. It is anger. You know, it is people just fed up, and you know, people asking, you know, what is something new? You know, and so that's what I found encouraging more than anything about the things that Warren said. You know, because generally it's like, you know, oh, the Green New Deal. You know, and like, you know, let's support the green capitalists. You know, and that's going to save us. But that didn't even come up. And so it is pretty organic because, like you said, Lipson, there isn't many, like, organizations, which could be a problem in the long run. But it is pretty spontaneous, actually. You know, basically a lot of kids in Oakland, is my understanding, and San Francisco called these protests, and people showed up. You know, it wasn't this, like, you know, like, planned protest for months or weeks. You know, it's people who, you know that something is wrong, something needs to happen. The problem I have is that it is limited in scope, and that, you know, we want to make it just about race, and then, you know, trying to advance a different narrative, you know, it's hard, especially in this identity politics minefield. Like, for example, you know, one of the organizations I'm part of, we posted like some thing about Fred Hampton, you know, where he was talking about a proletarian, international proletarian revolution, and how race is used to pin us against each other. And so, because, you know, we are not, that don't, and apparently that knowledge only belongs to Black people. You know, if you touch it as a non-Black person, then it is a minefield. You can get, you know, negative feedback, even canceled, you know, being brought into, your loyalty is being brought into question to the movement. And so what I find dangerous is that by doing that, you know, by, you know, it comes from a good place, I guess. You know, they're trying to give voice to Black people who obviously, you know, have been misrepresented in many ways, especially the more radical activists, you know, like the Black Panthers. But at the end of the day, I feel that what is that's going to achieve is leaving them in the fight. When the clampdown comes down hard, it's going to come down on those communities, you know, because we're not spreading the message that it's not just about, you know, white on Black, you know, racism. It's about the whole fucking system being racist, you know, and obviously, you know, Black people, by being the most marginalized, you know, face the brunt of the violence that is necessary to uphold this system. And, you know, but so there's been even like locally controversies around, you know, Latinos starting to say Latinx lives matter, you know, and, you know, and fighting. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, you know, we're starting to have these divisions and, you know, that ultimately don't, they're not fruitful, you know, they're corrosive and it doesn't grow the movement because it is, you know, this is not just about this, you know, the police in our communities, but it's about fucking ICE. It's about the military. It's about the National Guard that was on watch. It's about the whole system. And I don't think those conversations are advancing, really.
Well, Eduardo, would you be willing to just say, what do you think about what's happening at this moment?
Well, yeah, I could, but I do want to follow up with what Kenny just said, because it's something I have been struggling with, and I would like to get some feedback on it maybe another time. But it's about all lives matter, Black lives matter, Latinx lives matter. It's something we did an episode on identity politics. So I just want to, in parentheses, just say, I was wondering after we did this identity politics episode, which we might have to revisit with Kenny, how does socialist see the concentration on Black Lives Matter instead of the working class? I don't know. I think you touched on that. Is that where you were sort of, Kenny? Is that maybe?
Sort of, I mean, yeah. Obviously I'm not denying that, you know, a lot of the violence, you know, those folks in the most marginalized communities always, you know, this happens in many nations and, you know, it is usually on the minority groups. You know, I'm not denying that, but apparently if I challenge any notion that, you know, this is not just a, you know, a white on Black thing, you know, this is an institution, a system that is fundamentally, you know, violent, you know, coming down on the most marginal people, you know, because, you know, and I want to expand this because if we are talking about the repression that's happening on the streets right now, you know, the state terrorism, you know, we have to talk about the connection of these to our imperial ways, you know, because tactics and technologies that are used abroad in terms of occupation always migrate back. I mean, we cannot talk about the increased militarization of our streets, our police, you know, without the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, so it needs to advance. This movement has to be anti-war, anti-capitalist, period. But that is not the form that is taken. It is simply being like left on a Black on white thing, you know, as if, and then where do we leave our Black capitalists, our brown capitalists? I don't give a shit about Oprah. I don't give a shit about Jay-Z. You know, they've obviously shown, you know, Oprah like cuddling fucking George W. Bush, you know, in Mr., you know, honorable president. You know, they're complicit in this shit. You know, and I'm not trying to, you know, I'm for liberation of everyone. I'm not trying to replace or get a seat at the oppressor's table. What good is that? You know, and identity politics takes that approach, at least how I understand it. That, you know, it's basically bashing, shaming, and there's no room for discussion. You know, then, you know, we cancel each other out, and that's what's happening at this moment among groups from different, we're just supposed to shut up. Yes, I'm not trying to appropriate, you know, Black people's voices. No, I'm trying to advance that conversation that this is about a whole system. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, and if anything, I don't want to leave, you know, our Black and brown people fighting by themselves. Because ultimately, I believe that in order to win, it will take a, you know, working class movement in order to choke, you know, this system down. Because reform is not possible. You know, that's where I stand.
You know, the system will always find a way to circumvent things. We can move fast enough, you know, to contain this beast, you know, capitalism. And, you know, it's kind of evident now that people are starting to listen, even like reaching out to me that I've said that voting is a measure of, you know, the basically it's a measure of how much control the ruling class has over the political currents. You know, and because I made a post on Instagram about that, you know, even during the civil rights, you know, the small victories that there were, it wasn't done through voting. It was because people were fucking tired and not participating in the system. And then we are told that JFK, LBJ, they were heroes. Fuck them. Their hands were forced, you know, by people that were not participating in the system. We're refusing to do their bidding. And so that's what it's going to take. It's not going to take, and it cannot just be on black people. And that's my point. And I feel that we are leaving them, you know, alone, but by pretending, by thinking that we care. That's my point. Because they will clamp down. They will clamp down. They're going to come down after people. You know, they're going to be arrested, persecuted. And so we're asking them to speak again on their own. So what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, I can say my perspective on everything that's been going on. I don't know how to say this, feeling a little bit the pressures of this is not going to come out right. I guess that is sort of the approach that socialists should take, which is to concentrate on a class, the oppression that is coming in onto people's class. And I think race is the way to divide. The capitalist class are using race to divide. This is exactly, I think, to their benefit. And if I may, this is a speculation. This actually, I was sort of had this thought in my head that this entire, the riots that are happening are almost benefiting the wealthy, because now it's deviating or distracting from the economy to race. And that's just a speculation. I thought I could be, again, I'm not necessarily saying that I think that completely 100%, but because the economy could almost unify the working class, that everyone's feeling it, race is again used as a weapon to try to divide people and distract people away from the economy so that they can concentrate on what's happening there instead of what's happening here because of COVID. And COVID exists. I don't want people to think that I don't think it exists. But COVID has been used as a way to also to benefit. Because we've had ongoing discussions here, and I'm not going to delve into too much, but COVID has been used as a way to further agenda for profit-driven ideas, and the economy is I think the what people are feeling, and that energy that feeling that this system has failed them. And if they were to think, and if they were really to buy into that, if everyone was here buying into that, then we would start paying more attention to who is actually benefiting during this crisis. But because race is now the issue, this is a speculation of mine, race is now the issue, we've diverted our attention onto this, which is important, because it is important, because it's tragic. And because police brutality does exist, and because, you know, these things are not new. This is in the wake of, as well, Ahmed Arbery. This is also, I forget this, the wonderful black woman that was unfortunately murdered as well. This is in the heels of that. What was her name?
Breonna Taylor or something like that?
Yes, I forget her name. So it's terrible. But This is it's tragic. And again, it's like another shock doctrine. We are now then focused over here with race, and we're not focusing on the economy. Again, all speculation. I could be wrong. Please make me understand differently. But we've made it about race, and now we're not unified to sort of pay attention to the capitalist ruling class. Now we're focused on race. And if I said that, and I'm not sure if I want to keep that out loud, people would say, what are you trying to say? Are you saying that this, like, undermining the entire tragic events that have unfolded? And I'm not trying to. I really am not trying to. I'm simply saying that during another crisis on top of another crisis, there are back channels being managed back there taking advantage of this, is what I think. It's all in the speculation, and this is just me just thinking out loud. So anyhow, that's why I was curious more of what Kenny was saying, because I thought maybe he was sort of articulating not maybe the same thing, but in the ballpark of what I had been speculating before recording right now.
And again, just to take a page out of your book, to clarify my point.
What I'm saying is,
I'm not saying that it's not about race. You know, that race, it is, you know, it plays a role. I am saying that this system is fundamentally racist.
Yes.
You know, it needs racism, you know, to excuse many things. And in order to address the wrongs that we're trying to correct, that's my point. We can go around talking about reform and this and that, and obviously reforms, you know, will be part of a revolution. You know, but ultimately we can't get around the question of undoing this whole fucking system. You know, and so if we're not pushing to undo it, these wrongs are not gonna be corrected. You know, and Michelle Alexander in the New Jim Crow kind of talks about how the systems of violence morph, evolve, you know, and for example, say we get rid of prisons, you know, it's something, abolish prisons, you know, the buildings, the institutions still exist. So it is an institution that goes hand in hand with capitalism. So if we're talking about abolition of ICE, abolition of prisons, we need to talk about abolition of capitalism. And so I do want to correct this wrong. I don't want to dismiss the plight of black. I'm not. On the contrary, what I'm saying is we all need to be fighting to undo this fucking system.
So at one level, the capitalist class is in the United States is the one that most recognizes that the lives of black workers really matters. That's why they occupy them with police. That's why they put so many in prison. They recognize how important it is for them to double and triply oppress that group in order to control everyone, all workers. So the capitalist class understands how valuable it is to smash the lives of black people in this country. They're the ones at one level who understand at the deepest level how their system works, that their system is predicated on their ability to smash the lives of black workers in this country, as well as immigrants, as well as Muslims, as well as women, in order to exploit the entire working class in this country, and then to use that exploitation to then go out and use the profits of that exploitation to go out and get more loot and more booty out there, not booty, more treasure of other countries, and use that racism as a justification for taking the wealth of the Middle East, of Africa, of South America. So they understand how important the lives of black workers are to their plan for controlling the globe under capitalism. The thing is if the working class only understands its task as Black Lives Matter, then we will not be successful. We will have to understand, and like Kenny said, does Obama's life matter as much as George Floyd? No, it does not. George Floyd, for us as workers, is far more important. You came down and got one of us, one of ours.
Yeah.
The black people in prison are far more, any individual black person in prison is 1,000 times more important to our cause than Barack Obama or Colin Powell or any of the people you mentioned, whatever, right? Those are the people who are important for our future and for our cause to have a chance of victory. We must release our brothers and sisters in jail and make them part of our cause, just like we say we have to allow our brothers and sisters across the border to come in and join our cause, and join in a cause that looks a lot like a riot and looting, but much better organized, much better armed, much more clear about what it's trying to do. We'll burn the stuff you're going to use against us, but we're going to keep the stuff that we plan to use for our society. What the rioters and looters have right is you're not going to get anything just by being peaceful. You're not going to get seen just by being peaceful. They understand something very deeply, and that's why I do believe I have seen like people who have been critical of the pandemic, calling it a plandemic, who now feel like, oh, these rioters and looters have now allowed the state to crack down. The state's going to crack down no matter what. Like they had a plan for cracking that. The quarantine is a crackdown, and they have a plan for extending that crackdown beyond this. And yes, we can see the state once again is going to mobilize with the Insurrection Act, things like that. But what's important right now is the fight back. That part is important. And and in that regard, a fight back that is animated to take down and take on racism is crucial to the possibility of this cause, of our cause, being successful. But if it only sees it, if it exclusively sees it as Black lives or Latinx lives or Muslim lives, we will then be divided and will not be able to see each other on what the basis of our solidarity is, which is work as workers. And all of us as workers are not feeling the same level of oppression. We are all exploited, but we're not feeling the same level of oppression. But if we think that that difference of oppression separates us, then we are falling for the capitalist plot, which is why the capitalists so focus on smashing the lives of blacks, black workers, the most in this country. All right, that's not necessarily true in Japan. Japan, it's going to be Koreans. All right, but each capitalist class rules by identifying its most vulnerable section and smashing them, and they understand that it's the lives of that minority that is so important to smash in order to maintain their rule. And so, there is no way to use that divisive strategy of theirs and turn it into something we can use. We have to find a way of uniting ourselves. But if you can't unite, if you're going to say, well, it's just a class struggle, racism is used to divide the class. So we are going to have to understand, like, we're going to have to find a way of overcoming that division. I would just say that the only way I know to do that is socialist revolution. And that does mean a revolution that unites workers nationally and internationally to take down the system that the police are there to defend. The demands of the movement, we'll get into that, but even abolishing the police, what are you talking about? That you can't abolish these police without dismantling the system that they're there to defend. And they're there to only protect and serve the property relations that the capitalists want to maintain. So you can't take out the police without taking out the rights of the capitalists to rule, because that's who made them. That's who they serve. The police didn't create capitalism. The police don't benefit from that. They are a product of capitalism. They are a product of authoritarianism, of the tyranny, of the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, just like the military is abroad, and now we can see they can come home. So you can't solve this by reforming the police or even abolishing the police. The only way you will do this is by taking out the system at its root, and that is the profit system. And that does mean uniting workers in a armed struggle to take back our things, to take down the government, and to establish our own working class government that will decide how things get run instead of running it under profit.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand these relationships, oppression versus exploitation, and how oppression of the most fragile, marginal, vulnerable, again, falls, it's part of the plan, because this is global. The U.S. has a particular race relation against black people, obviously, so does a lot of Europe. But then, where do we leave, workers in the Middle East that are, have come from India, or workers, from the Philippines and other countries, or, African workers in Italy, And so on and so on. You know, you can look at examples in different nations. China, within its own country, you know, oppressing the minorities. So this is, you know, it's a formula that it has its own life in the U.S., but it's not unique. You know, and that's, you know, obviously I'm not saying that Black lives don't matter. On the contrary, I agree with Lipson, that, you know, they know, you know, it's part of their game. And, you know, and I agree with the statement that, you know, Black lives, or at least it was actually came from a Black Panther who said that, you know, until, the, you know, if a Black man is free, the whole world will be free, you know. And so because they're a tool of this system. And so, you know, I agree on that statement. And yeah.
I think it's clear from everyone being out on the streets that this whole confinement and the curfew and COVID-19 was not going to stop them. I think they knew, people knew, that the government had placed these restrictions, and they it was expected that they were going to stay home, but everyone went out onto the streets because they were going to show massively that they were not going to be all right with this tragic event that happened at the heels of all of these other people that happened right before George Floyd. And what other events might have happened that we probably don't know of that happened during that time as well, because only of this event was recorded, and we don't know other ones that sadly are not being publicly boomed through the internet. So I just feel as if this is one of the... ¿Cómo se dice? ¿Harto? Like, hasta acá, cuando una... Yeah, people, you have, there's only so much someone can take with restrictions, surveillance, constant violence against their community. You're eventually going to get people do what they're doing now, and they're demanding attention. So why would the windows not be shattered? Why would the looting not happen? Why would the fires of police cars not happen? It's happening. And if people are trying to distract the protest to saying this is violent, people are just fed up. So the criticism that's coming from the media and other people who are saying, well, violence doesn't justify... you know, you don't justify it with violence. I feel that is a distracting thing, because you're diverting it now, putting it on them for what is happening in this nation, when we really should be concentrating on the murder of thousands of Black lives that are being murdered at the hands of state-sponsored law enforcement. So I will say that in my criticism of at least some of the forums that I've been seeing on Nextdoor.com, criticizing the violence on the streets, on Facebook, and other forums, on other platforms that I've seen that have been criticizing the violence, because it's a distraction point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one way that, you know, the media is complicit in creating this consensus, right, to, you know, so basically... keep capitalism intact. And so we talk about reformism, you know, in the sense that I've had conversations with my family where we disagree. But my mother watches Univision, you know, a Spanish TV channel, and the stories are, you know, constantly advancing is that, you know, oh, like hardworking, you know, small business owners, you know, and again, like you said, distracting from the main conversation here. Which is, you know, has to be about capitalism and, you know, and all these connections of, you know, and so, yeah, we're not going to get the real story. We're not even getting the real repression that's happening on the streets on mainstream media. You know, there is a lot of horrible things. And that's the other thing that I'm wondering, why aren't we outraged about that too? You know, we're still talking about George Floyd,
But what about all the repression going on in the street big time, you know, and you know, as a function, you know, of the system or the whole constant threat that the National Guard will come in, you know, and but yeah, so the conversation is not expanding. I don't think it's failing already. To again, obviously, me as a socialist, I would hope that, you know, for example, workers, we're going to strike, you know, for solidarity for this movement, you know, and start rolling, you know, start the ball rolling in that way. You know, verbally, some do, you know, and there are small actions like that bus driver in New York and the union saying, you know, we don't work for, you know, the police. And you know, some unions breaking ties, you know, with the police. And I don't know if this is where we might jump a little bit into your case, Lipson. About it, you know, because I heard callings in front of the school, right, like where you teach, calling for...
I actually know about what happened. I actually don't know Wednesday. Okay. Where did you go? If you could just say, give context before you go there. Can, what happened Wednesday? What was... There was an event, what demonstration?
It was a demonstration called by a small group, which honestly doesn't even have a face to it. It's a youth-led group, as far as I know. And it's called Just No Justice, No Peace. And it was in front of Mission High School, if it's okay to say, Lipson, that's where you teach. And that's where I went to school. That's where Lipson taught me chemistry. Contrary to what people think, he never taught me politics.
I didn't.
I came to that on my own. But yeah, so it was in front of Mission High School. It was led by, you know, young people, young black people, and about over 50,000 people showed up. This is something that was like organized, you know, like 2 weeks ago or even like a week and a half. And so 50,000 people showed up. You know, it was super hot, you know, one of the hottest days here. And yeah, that's where we were, you know, and obviously they spoke and they had different people just give, you know, speak up, and there was ceremony. There was a festive atmosphere, really. You know, everyone was cool, and they even brought up the fact that, you know, we were to respect, you know, small businesses, and that they weren't the anarchists, you know, from destroying things unnecessarily. Yeah, so it was pretty massive. It was a lot more people than I expected to show up. But during that, the speaking portion, there was a part where they were calling for the teachers, basically union, to cut the contract with the police, or the school district, I guess, to cut the contract with the cops, which I don't know the extent of the contract. I don't know if you can enlighten us on that, Lipson, what they do exactly. But, you know, that's more of an action, you know, that it is meaningful, you know, than just a statement, right? But I don't know if you have anything to
say. Yeah, I mean, the police have a kind of, I don't know if it's in the form of a contract or a memorandum of understanding, that they can be used as sort of soft security in school for cases where there's a gun or a weapon. That's my understanding, like for that kind of stuff, right? And at some level, you know, some schools talk about how those police officers are nicer and some are meaner, but it's a relationship with the SFPD that exists between San Francisco Unified School District and the SFPD. So that's what I would say. And that, from my understanding, is there is talk of from the Board of Ed of defunding, of ending that relationship, which... Okay, you know, it doesn't end. I mean, it doesn't. I don't know. Fine. That's what I guess I would say. I think the capitalists are trying to find out how much do they have to give to get people to kind of like stop, and this might be one of the areas where they're prepared to give. I guess what I would first, I would say that I agree with Kenny that the demonstrations were very like. They were very warm, like people were like nice with each other. I do think it was, for me, what was important was I really wasn't sure after 2 months of this 6 feet of separation and after seeing so much anxiety from other working people about each other, and we're all staying away from each other, I was like, what was this demonstration going to feel like? Was it going to be all like fear and like we got to stay 6 feet apart from each other? And there was none of that, you know? And it was sort of like people understand, what I got a sense of is people understand that our safety is in coming together, not in being apart. That's where our safety will be. Now, what you do when you come together, that's a bigger question. And I don't think this question of violence is a distraction from the ruling class. I think they are worried about it. I think they understand that as long if our side comes together and insists on only being peaceful, then we are not a threat to them. And it's not about saying we need to be violent, but it is about saying who's going to decide. And the basis for state violence that it exists, the reason the state has a monopoly on violence is to ensure its authority. That's why the violence is there, is to ensure its authority. So we cannot say we will not use violence because the working class has to be prepared to impose its authority. And that is the sentiment that's beginning to get expressed through things like the riots and the looting. It's like, no, I'm not going to listen to your rules. I'm going to do what I want to do. Or we're going to do what we want to do and lash out back at you, you know, and take the things you dangle out in front of us and say, these are so great, but I have to work a whole day just to afford shoes or a shirt and things like that. Whether I have a job or not, you know, so now I'm going to get it. Now I'm taking it. You've dangled it in front of me all these years and said what an important thing this is. Well, I'm going to get it now. And it is an act of rebellion. But that won't be enough. An act of rebellion to take things back, or an act of rebellion to destroy things, is not going to be enough. We will need to be prepared to use violence to impose our authority on the capitalists, and that is something that the capitalists are very worried about. And so they don't take this question of violent and nonviolent lightly. They very much want a movement to pledge nonviolence and to be determined, because that is a movement that will ultimately is one that they can disregard. Now, it's not about, like I said, this is not for me about saying like, oh, violence is a good thing. It's just to understand that they use their control of that violence to maintain control of the globe. If we're going to take it from them, we are going to have to be prepared to defend ourselves and to be able to strike at them and remove their ability to have that monopoly of violence. Sometimes that just means taking the soldiers and bring them to our side if they come to our side. But if they shoot at us, if we can't shoot back, then we won't win.
Yeah.
And I guess almost use your imagination and imagine that if those maybe 30, 40, 50,000 people, if they were armed, walking through the streets peacefully, what would the police do about that? What would the National Guard do about that? And we're not there yet. There has to be a reason for that. In the Russian Revolution, there was a reason to be armed, because they were defending the workers' councils. They were defending their institutions, the workers' institutions that were coming up as an alternative to the parliamentary system that existed. We don't have those alternative institutions. But these questions, we need to form them, and we will need to form them in order to have a strike that is a spreading strike, that spreads from a teacher strike to a transportation worker strike to a restaurant worker strike, which is what needs to happen in our city and the cities throughout the country. And for that to spread, we'll need organization, we'll need workers' councils again. And when those workers' councils are faced with a National Guard that says, no, you don't get to decide what the products of your work, where they go, then the question of, are we armed or not? It's going to be very important. And I want to talk about it now, because I actually think that these are the stakes that we need to be discussing now. These are the ways we have to talk. Oh, are we prepared for that? Because unfortunately, as much as I was buoyed by the size of the demonstration and the character of it, and as there was talk about capitalism, there was talk about revolution, but overwhelmingly what I heard from the front was Trump's got to go. And we'll vote in a new set of people, and we're going to hold them accountable. No, you won't. No, you will not. you will not hold the Democratic Party accountable any more than you can hold Trump accountable, because they come from the same root, the capitalist class. And one is going to fool you into thinking you're holding them accountable. I get that, but it's just a mug's game. Obama and Clinton and Biden in the future are all going to play us the same way they've been played. And if we fall for that again, it just means that the can gets kicked down the road, and I do believe we are running out of time to stop our capitalist class from going into a reckless war with China. But that's where this is headed to me. And collecting all our data and building up an apparatus of control that's even harder to dismantle and uproot. So this moment is inspiring in regards to, it shows that people haven't been completely suckered by the COVID fear of each other. But it is also, it's also daunting about how far we have to go for us to realize the stakes that are the scale of the organization and where we have to be as workers in order to really take up this struggle.
And I think it'll be the measurement of its success will be to the degree that it's independent, right, from, you know, the political parties. But people are afraid to let go, like to say, I'm not going to vote, you know, and fuck that, you know, that's not going to change shit,
right,
you know, and get our shit together besides, you know, parallel to them, basically. But people aren't willing, you know, and they still want to believe. And again, it brings me back to this fundamentalist, like, sense of, you know, like the liberal mindset. I don't know. It's just that, you know, it's like letting go of something you believe so hard, you know, like you've been indoctrinated into voting is good and it's freedom. Letting go of that frame of understanding the world is pretty hard for a lot of people. And so we end up, you know, creating excuses as to why Biden is slightly better, you know, even if, in the whole at least that I hate so much, at least this, at least that, you know. And again, like, even just like you take issue by issue, they're not different, you know. Like, if anything, for example, me as a, you know, person from the Latin community, we know Obama was horrible on immigration, for example, and there was a plan for that, and there's a reason for that, you know, in the capitalist system. And you know, if anything, I keep saying that, you know, they're giving these houses too much credit in terms of immigration, because he's only taking the system that the other dude built. So you know, but these ideas are used for, you know, again, like herding people back into the party, and ultimately just keeping us, you know, demonstrated peacefully, and so we can make our constitutional rights, you know, be heard. But you know, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I wanted to comment on the issue of violence as well. When you talked about, what was it you said, 15,000 people armed if they were out on the streets? You know, it is a threat if people were armed. Antifa is an ideology more than an organization out there, and just Trump, because he is right now in the position of the presidency, and most people in the media are really looking for this boogie person to say, because they're the ones who are armed, are saying, that over there is the issue. It's those that are armed. If you were armed in this country and you were protesting armed and you were, as you said, 15,000 people, what would they make with that, right? That would be a threat, even if they were walking peacefully. It is a very, it's a threat to be armed and walking peacefully. That is already potentially, I don't know how they would excuse arresting so many people like that. I mean, they would find a way, right? I mean, I just can't think of how they would articulate to justify that, the capturing of so many people, you know, trying to find a way to pin them down to something criminal. But yeah, it could be the start of an uprising if you had that many people armed protesting.
And like Lipson said earlier, at that point, that's a threat to their monopoly on violence. And so they, you will become an enemy of the state. You know, and you have to understand that, you know, of the ruling state. So, and then we're talking about political prisoners. You know, everyone arrested is a political prisoner, you know, of a war, basically. You know, and for that, those things to happen, you know, you need to be prepared and, you know, and organized. And
let me be clear. It is not, I think there might have been 40,000 or 50, let's say it was 50,000 there. It is not the fact that 50,000 people being armed would suddenly make them powerful. What would make them more powerful is building organizations that allow them to build strikes across the city, but then shut that city down. But if in addition those people are armed to defend their strike and to defend the control over what resources are made and where they go, then you definitely have something that is the basis for a real socialist revolution. That's what I'm saying. It's like, and it is not, the demands that are being put on the police are saying, we want these police arrested, we want these police to go to jail, we want community monitoring, and that. That's not how you're gonna get the police to behave. The police cannot behave as long as you keep capitalism. They're going to have to be beaten off the streets. Brian last week had a line from one of his songs, that I think it was Epitaph, where it said, you know, the police badges are back on. And what he's referring to is the general strikes in the 30s in the city and also in Minneapolis, where cops were beaten off the streets so bad with bats that they took their badges off because they didn't even want to be identified as police. And workers policed themselves. They were doing traffic and all that kind of stuff. Bats are weapons of violence. We would maybe need more aggressive weapons later. I don't know. But those workers were prepared to use violence, and they got the police to no longer be the police and take their badges off. When they put their badges on, it was essentially a restatement of the state having reestablished its control. You know? And so we're going to have to get the police to take their badges off. And I don't think we're going to convince them to do it. They're going to have to be afraid. They're going to have to be afraid of workers collectively to say, we can't mess with them. Because unfortunately, they've been trained like rabid dogs to go after the most vulnerable people. They roust homeless. They roust immigrants. They go into the poorest communities. These people know what wealth looks like. They go into the poorest communities and put those people in jail. And yet, when $4.5 trillion is literally stolen from the country, they don't lift a finger. And they know about it, but they're not doing anything. They know what their job is. So these people have been trained to attack workers and trained specifically to attack black and brown workers. And by the way, there was a young Latino kid, 20 or 22-year-old kid, who was killed in Vallejo on the very same day as the demonstration. They thought he had a gun, but he had a hammer, you know, and they just shot him while he was on his knees. Okay, so it is, in a sense, this is, we do know this stuff sweeps up everyone and particularly sweeps up people of color. But, and cops, whether you're a black cop or a white cop or a Latino cop, you will do that shit because you have been trained to do that job in the same way that our military is trained, and they have to break them down in order to go do some pretty effed up stuff across the water when they go to Middle East or what have you. I actually think that police indoctrination runs deeper, which is why it's generally harder to get the police to come to your side. Whereas the military, this is where a revolution would happen. If you bring the National Guard in, this is why I think Esper is worried. If you bring the National Guard in and the National Guard refuses to shoot, then you as a politician, you as a ruling class, you have a problem. But that's kind of going far afield of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, you know, of, again, you know, and that's why I think of myself as a socialist, you know, understanding the pivotal role of workers, you know, not so much like the, you know, jumping into the violent aspect, you know, it's part of the equation, you know, it might have to get answered depending on how things play out. But the reality is that, you know, they can force us to work and, you know, and that's our biggest weapon. You know, and obviously, like, organizing in ways to circumventing their system, you know, in order to get the things that we need, And you know, obviously we can even like try to organize, you know, bypassing the capitalist system, you know, get things directly from producers. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to block us, you know, and at some point you're going to have to fight, you know, to get, you know, to, so they don't starve you to death. So, and I think this is one of the reasons just shortly that revolutions in Latin America, insurrections weren't successful, you know, even in Nicaragua, for example, that reverted back. It was never really a socialist revolution. You know, it ultimately got replaced. One state replaced another. You know, the workers were never in control, and they you know, you get choked away. You know, and these are the things that we as workers we have to prepare and strategize. You know, to not get choked away in a war of attrition. You know, and violence will be part of that because that's the way the capitalist state ultimately wants to impose their will on you. And the police and military and the National Guard, they're all part of that.
I imagine that we will have more of these tragic events, unfortunately. And I hope that the riots on the streets and this movement that exists, may informal, formal, organized, and disorganized, I hope that it is harnessed in some way to put to some good use to be able to hopefully maybe be the beginnings of a revolution. If that is what the intention or some way it's directed to, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't see it that way. Just from my lens right now, I don't see anything in that direction just as I'm watching. But as I've always said, I'm always hopeful, and this is the moment. I think this is the moment for people to take up their stand and to topple the system that we have in place. We said sometime 2 weeks ago, I think it was with Alison, that, you know, this is the moment to squat your homes. This is the moment to forget the moratoriums on rent and whatever. This is don't pay anything. You know, this is the moment to take over our public education and to take over our streets. And I think this is it. You know, I mean, every moment is it. That I just will leave it at that from my point of view.
Yeah, I do believe that these events in the context of all the stuff that's going on around the COVID stuff and the restructuring of society that's being talked about, the reimagining of education, the contact tracing, the level of depravity of the wealthy in the context of an economic crisis, the level of unemployment and how it's being experienced. I do believe that this event, that the murder of George Floyd by the police, is highlighting something about racism in this country at this moment, and is making more people aware of at least racism at a level of just kind of a moral indignation at what they're seeing. But I do think that the role of revolutionaries and socialists is to point out that this racism is not here as an immorality. It's not here as an idea, that it is actually built into the structure of society. And unless we restructure society, this stuff is going to not only exist, it's going to get worse, particularly in the context of we know that we are just starting the beginning of a period of a recession that will lead to a depression. And the more that there's a divide between rich and poor, the more there's going to be an emphasis on which group are you going to scapegoat to decide, you know, to explain that away, as opposed to, you know, deflecting from Jeffrey Bezos and all these people. Bezos, I believe, has made $34 billion during the pandemic. And I think they are talking about the capitalist class in this country having accumulated about $400 billion to itself over this time during this pandemic period. And think about that in the context of whatever else is going through. It is a robbery of a historic scale. And that, I'll just say that is what is and that robbery is built on the police doing things like this to George Floyd and doing this to black people and putting them in prison and brown people and putting them in prison But ultimately, it's about dividing workers. We have to understand that.
And I also think we're very far. You know, the only thing I hope out of this is that, you know, because at least in my circles, I don't have all the answers. I don't. You know, I have way more questions than answers as to how to get there. I think I have, you know, a basic understanding of the connections of things. But my hope out of this moment is that more people are willing to let go of this system and look into, you know, maybe the craziness that I'm talking about, you know, and people have reached out, you know, people want to participate, you know, and, you know, like just the small thing as having a Communist Manifesto reading, you know, in a practical way, not like that theoretical, you know, college, I read it in college once type of thing. So, you know, that's my hope at this moment, but that's only the beginning of a long road. You know, and, you know, again, like one thing I've learned from Blitzen and, you know, Brian is that, you know, as a socialist, you know, basically I'm a bearer of bad news. You know, I'm going to inspire you because I'm telling you, this shit is broken. This is the connection. And, you know, don't fall for the lies, basically. Don't fool yourself. And so, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I agree with you, Kenny, that I mean, I think we all agree the prospects for revolution, I mean, they're almost zero right now coming out of this, the working class revolution. But I think the hopes are things like when you mentioned the Communist Manifesto Study Group, if things like that start to happen across the country in small scale, then that means something's taking place. Because one thing I saw at these demonstrations is the organized left that I used to be part of, the International Socialist Organization, Revolutionary Communist Party, all our groups with our newspapers and our organization, which all of those groups were incapable of leading a struggle. I'm just telling you, all those groups have pretty much evaporated and gone and weren't even present at the demonstration. What's good about that is those organizations needed to go because they were never constructed to lead a revolution. What's bad about that is we're really starting a rebuilding operation for the revolutionary project from pretty much scratch. And we're not talking about anything like Bernie Sanders, that's for damn sure. So that project has to start now. We have to, and that means people are going to have to read about the Communist Manifesto. They're going to have to read about China. They're going to have to read about Russia. They're going to have to read about the Paris Commune. They're going to have to get educated about these struggles in the past. And it's just working class education. You're not going to get it in school. You're going to have to do it for yourself. And the sooner people start that, the more likely they can connect those revolutionary lessons to their own experience.
No, and at least my last thought is that, you know, I overheard Cornel West talking about, you know, things, and, you know, he's been in the wrong, obviously, and he's correcting himself in some ways. But ultimately, like, I don't know if we'll get it right away. You know, I don't. You don't. That's the reality. You don't know. You can hope for the best, do your best. But what he said was, is, you know, we get up and we fail better. That's what we can hope for.
Right. Inspiring.
Fail better.
Well, I mean, I really do hope, if I could say one last thing, I really do hope that the tragic events that are happening only accumulate more and more people to gather together to make a massive power force to be able to work together in a unified way to topple this system. And when that happens, I will join that stream. I really, yeah.
So refine your skills in something.
All right, that does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast slash channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests in the episode notes where we found this episode or on our blog at what-s-left.webnote.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast slash channel there and connect with us. I'm going to remind folks, if you like anything that you have heard here, share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 5 platforms on iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Vaca with co-hosts Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. We'll check us out next week.
Ciao. Right. Take care.
Right. Should we wrap up?
Do you have any final thoughts, Eduardo?
No. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.